Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, February 2nd. Punxsutawney Phil, and frankly just about everyone in the world, saw their shadows this morning and decided to go hibernate for another 6 weeks. And in fact, you know, if we all agree to actually do that, with only the most essential of essential services continuing to bring everyone food and medicine for 6 weeks and that's it, we could probably beat back the pandemic like a few countries actually did at the beginning a year ago. But that's not how we roll. So it's just the groundhog, smarter than we think, choosing to chill until mid-March. Meanwhile, it's a very interesting moment in national politics with Mitch McConnell denouncing Marjorie Taylor Greene, her Republican House colleagues not so much, bipartisan negotiations, but to what end on a COVID relief bill, as Democrats are learning from Obama-era history and don't want talks to drag on and bog down, the impeachment trial a week from today, and then there is this. We should all stop for a few minutes, if you can find the time today, and watch or listen to at least part of Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Instagram Live presentation from last night, in which she openly discussed the moment during the insurrection when someone broke into her office and she was afraid she was going to die, literally. She heard a pounding on her door and someone shouting, "Where is she?" And then she describes where she was as that person broke through.
Like, I'm here, and the bathroom door starts going like this. Like, the bathroom door's behind me, or rather, in front of me, and I'm like this, and the door hinges right here. And I just hear, "Where is she? Where is she?" And this was the moment where I thought everything was over. And the weird thing about moments like these is that you lose all sense of time. In retrospect, maybe it was 4 seconds.
Well, it turned out to be a Capitol Police officer breaking in during those 4 seconds, but he hadn't identified himself, according to the Congresswoman, and she had no way of knowing at first whether he was there to protect her or attack her. The Congresswoman then reveals that she is a survivor of sexual assault and puts the response that she thinks is required to the insurrection in that context. Some of her lines, "Those who have argued that it is time to move on from the events of that day," were, quote, "using the same tactics of every other abuser who just tells you to move on. Tactics," quote, "of that man who touched you inappropriately at work, telling you to move on. Are they going to believe you? Or the adult who, you know, if they hurt you when you were a child and you grow up and you confront them about it and they try to tell you that what happened never happened," unquote. From New York City Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from her Instagram Live presentation last night. As her colleagues in the House decide whether and how much to punish Marjorie Taylor Greene, who liked a tweet suggesting someone put a bullet in Nancy Pelosi's head. With that as prelude, with me now, Jake Sherman and Anna Palmer, founders of a new national politics news website focused primarily on Congress called Punchbowl News. Many of you know Jake and Anna as the authors previously of the widely read Politico Playbook newsletter every day. They're now making one for Punchbowl and hosting a podcast called The Daily Punch, which just made its debut yesterday. And maybe you know their bestseller from 2019, the book about Congress during the first 2 years of the Trump administration, with a title that might have just been a play on words back then, but is frighteningly chilly now. It was called The Hill to Die On, The Battle for Congress and the Future of Trump's America. Jake and Anna, thanks for coming on. As always, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Great to be here.
Have you thought about your two-year-old book title since the insurrection?
Yes. Anna, I don't know. We've never, Anna and I have probably never talked about this, but it's been pointed out to us that it might not be the most appropriate title now. Obviously, we didn't know that there would be a riot or insurrection in the Capitol in 2017 when we titled the book. And obviously the book, as we discussed with you, Brian, when the book came out several years ago, was more metaphorical about issues and people taking controversial stances. But I think we would probably name it something differently were we writing it today.
Yeah, I don't mean to suggest, and I hope you're not taking it this way, that the book title at the time was inappropriate, just that there was the kind of metaphor that people use in writing, and now look how far we've descended in these last 2 years to where it is literally true, a hill to die on. Can you help put the AOC Instagram speech into context, into that context? It seems to me that more is coming out every day about how bad it really was there on January 6th.
I think one of the things that is important on AOC is just what a communicator she is. And she communicates directly, straight into the camera in a very powerful Instagram Live. I think what you're starting to hear is more stories come out because as members have had time, as reporters have had time and distance from it actually happening, I think there's PTSD. I think there's a lot of distrust of the cops. I think you hear that in AOC's video there. And there's a huge reckoning and that we wrote about today that's happening in and around the Capitol, around security, around the future of how members are going to interact with each other, how their spouses and their children are going to probably interact in public. There's a lot of fear right now, and I think she kind of hit that in a way that was very personal and very raw.
I think it's one of the rare instances that it's gotten worse with time. And I was here that day, and I think, looking back at all the things we now know and how close we were to a really, calamitous disaster, and I'm not underplaying what is happening, what happened, but just how close we were to a massacre is quite scary.
Is there any indication that either Trump or any Republican members of Congress knew that a violent break-in was being planned?
No, we didn't have any idea of that, and I don't think any members of Congress knew that. There's a lot of people who assume or suppose that that some of these people knew, some of the members of Congress knew and were giving tours and what has been called reconnaissance tours of the Capitol. I don't have any evidence that that's true or not true. And there's obviously criminal investigations into this in the House. And we reported this morning, the leadership of the House is considering creating a 9/11 style commission to study the instance, to study the insurrection at the Capitol on January 6th. So we don't have any evidence of that at this point. But I think we'll find out before long.
I guess I'm wondering, Anna, if you expect Trump's knowledge of events that day as they were going on or prior to that day, if any, to play a role at his impeachment trial, in addition to his months-long riling people up with the angry lie that the election had been rigged and stolen.
Yeah, I think what we're starting to see just now in how the House Democrats are going to present their case is they really want to focus on what he said. I think they're trying to make a direct argument between the president's appearance and then what took place afterward. I don't know that it'll go back, the weeks after the election and kind of the fomenting. I assume there will be some of that, but I do think that what we're starting to see is the House managers really focus in on that day, because I think it's a real, just kind of a concrete way. Everybody, all those members, all those senators were there. They experienced it.
Personally, I hope they do go back, because I think it's a weaker case to say that he gave a speech at a rally just before the insurrection in which he said, on the one hand, go there peacefully, on the other hand, fight and be strong and things like that, without the context of, for months, even before the election, he refused to say that he would engage in a peaceful transfer of power if he lost. He was implying only if it was not rigged to my eye, and then riling people up for months with the big lie, this has been rigged, this has been stolen, you should be angry, at the same time as refusing to rule out violence. So it seems to me that there's a larger time frame case to be made, but I guess we'll find out next week if they make it. I want to go on to Marjorie Taylor Greene, the freshman Republican congresswoman from Georgia. Could you remind our listeners, who may not follow stories like this so closely, actually, what she has said and done that's been so inflammatory that the discussion now is about consequences?
Yeah, she's said just about everything, Brian, under the sun. She suggested that some sort of large group of Jewish people have put a laser in space to cause wildfires and events like that. She has said, made Islamophobic comments, has suggested that Sandy Hook and the Parkland massacres were false flag operations, that were, you know, not real shootings. I mean, these are not fringe opinions. These are not fringe ideas. These are beyond fringe. These are absolute lunacy. People would be looked at, if they were said this on the street, as you know, not, something might have been wrong with them. Now, she was elected by a huge margin in a Northwest Georgia district. And there's been a movement among Republicans and Democrats, frankly, to remove her from her congressional committees. And Democrats are going to take action to do that if the Republican leadership does not. So it's unlike, you know, listen, we've had people with controversial opinions. These aren't controversial opinions. These are racist and bigoted opinions that are just so far outside the mainstream that Democrats are considering taking what's otherwise an unprecedented action.
So House Republican Leader Kevin McCarthy seems to be dealing with Marjorie Taylor Greene gently, but less so now Mitch McConnell looking on from the Senate. He released a statement yesterday that didn't mention her name, but clearly was about her. McConnell wrote, and listeners, if you haven't heard this yet, it's another example of things you never expected to hear out of Mitch McConnell's mouth, or in this case from his pen. He wrote, "Loony lies and conspiracy theories are cancer for the Republican Party and our country. Someone who suggested that perhaps no airplane hit the Pentagon on 9/11, that horrifying school shootings were pre-staged, and that the Clintons crashed JFK Jr.'s airplane is not living in reality. This has nothing to do with the challenges facing American families or the robust debates on substance that can strengthen our party." So, Anna, why did Mitch McConnell weigh in on a member of the House, and why have her House Republican colleagues, you know, in the House of Representatives where she serves, been mostly silent?
I would say a couple things. One, I think it's very unusual. You can't underscore how unusual it is for certainly Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, but, you know, Mitch McConnell to weigh into House affairs. But just in general, usually you don't see a lot of crosstalk between the chambers and policing of their own members. So I think that that's important to understand, because the second point I would make is this is really about the battle for the future of the Republican Party. That might sound dramatic to listeners, but I think that it is no less dramatic than what it is. I think Mitch McConnell is concerned about what the future of Republicans and conservatives is going to look like in terms of 2022, 2024. Donald Trump is no longer the president. He's no longer the leader of the Republican Party. And I think you see Mitch McConnell filling that void a bit in the statements he made there. I think the reality is for Kevin McCarthy and House Republicans, Kevin McCarthy doesn't like to publicly take on members like this. They also, you know, there's a lot of Trump Republicans, and Marjorie Taylor Greene has aligned herself with the president, has had a phone call, has tweeted about it. And so I think nobody wants on the House side to catch the ire of the president, particularly as Kevin McCarthy looks to 2022 and trying to become the next Speaker of the House.
And for additional context, let me read a little from today's Michelle Goldberg column in the New York Times. It starts, Steve King, the Republican former congressman from Iowa, must feel robbed. 2 years ago, he was stripped of all his committee assignments after asking in an interview with the New York Times, quote, white nationalist, white supremacist, Western civilization, how did that language become offensive? He really asked white nationalist, white supremacist, how did that language become offensive? And then, as Michelle reminds us, the Republican Party threw its weight behind King's primary challenger, and he was whisked off the national stage. And then she draws a contrast with Marjorie Taylor Greene. As it happens this week, House Republicans are seeking to punish a prominent woman in their ranks, but it's not Greene. A big chunk of the House Republican caucus is reportedly trying to oust Liz Cheney of Wyoming from leadership because she voted to impeach Donald Trump for inciting the January 6th insurrection. Jake, how would you put that in context?
Well, I mean, Liz Cheney is a, out of step, frankly, no matter what you think of former President Trump and what he did. And no one is suggesting that what he did was appropriate or proper. Liz Cheney is out of step with most Republicans, right? The vast majority of Republicans are with Trump and believe that he should not be brought up on charges or impeached. And Liz Cheney has been on the wrong side of her colleagues on several issues. Now, we don't know whether she's going to lose that spot, although if I were a gambling man, I would say that she probably will lose that spot. And it does speak, Brian, to how much of a shift there has been in Republican politics. That a Cheney, somebody who's from, you know, the daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney, is under heat and under the microscope for not being a loyal enough Republican, something we kind of would have never assumed would happen in modern day Republican politics.
Let's take a phone call. Nora in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi there, Nora.
Oh, thanks so much for taking my call. I just can't believe that Marjorie Taylor Greene is even in Congress after the things that she has said. It's incredible. And people in other countries must be, like, just looking at this and shaking their heads. It's like the plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan. It's like the uprisings that took place in the spring at state legislatures with, bringing guns into the legislative chambers. How can this happen?
Nora, thank you. So, Anna, Nora asked, what must other people in other countries think about Marjorie Taylor Greene being in Congress? Here's a tweet that has come in from a listener with a question for you as a political reporter. It says, has anyone gone to her district to explore what they think of their new congresswoman? That's an interesting question. Maybe they thought one thing casually when they were just choosing Republican over Democrat in November, and now maybe more has come to light and they have different points of view, or maybe they support her in her district. Is there any way to know?
I mean, listen, these aren't things that Marjorie Taylor Greene just started espousing, right? It's not as if she got elected and then she, put a supercharge on her comments on QAnon and other the racist and bigoted things she said. These are things that have been well known and documented. So I think, and there's been some stories that have come out about other members of her state delegation who are embarrassed in Georgia and who don't think it's great, considering the fact that you saw two Senate Democrats win. If you're a Republican there, you wonder what that might mean for the future of Republicans in Georgia. But so far, I have not, since the election, been to her district. It's a good question. She has not backed down at all. And I will say, I think Jake and I often talk about, Punch Bowl, where what we cover is power, people, politics. And most politicians are motivated by getting elected, staying elected, moving up in leadership. And she has not, has said that she's worried at all about any of her, congressional voters or folks, abandoning her. And so far, we haven't seen any reporting to that degree, or I haven't anyway.
Let me read a tweet from a listener who says, why are we giving airtime to that congresswoman, meaning talking about her? Why not discuss how COVID bill is going to go, how Biden is doing? And of course, we're doing all those things too in many segments on the show. But let me turn that question around a little bit to focus it on Congress. Because the Democrats obviously feel it is important to talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene when they could, in theory, be writing her off as one fringe member in a 435-member body, the House of Representatives. But she did like a tweet calling for a bullet to be put in the head of Nancy Pelosi, as well as some of these other things. So, Anna, maybe you could tell us how important the Democratic leadership feels it is that apparently they are, even though they're not supposed to control the Republican members, they may take action against her today or tomorrow on their own.
I mean, it's definitely unprecedented what is happening. And if they, if the House Democrats do take the steps to remove her from the committee assignment, I think it's a couple of things. One, I do think it's a political winner. I mean, people probably don't like Mark offended when I say that, but I think for Democrats, being able to show as stark a contrast with Republicans as possible is something that they are trying to do. The more they focus on, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene as being representative of the Republican Party, it will help their chances of maintaining their slim in majority in the House and hopefully from their perspective trying to grow it. I also do think that in the context of January 6th and what happened in the Capitol, that words matter and that everyone is on edge, and it's not as if Marjorie Taylor Greene is all of a sudden really shifting her posture. She's continuing to use a lot of the same language, a lot of the same kind of tone, and I think you've heard both, not just Nancy Pelosi, but also Kevin McCarthy, tell his members repeatedly, they haven't really paid attention to him, but that this is not the time to single out members or go on the attack for them because of the heightened security risk.
Biden met yesterday with 10 Senate Republicans to see if there is a bipartisan way forward on the next COVID relief bill. They started out a whopping $1.4 trillion apart on total amount of help to send, including from what I read, there is still zero aid to state and local governments in the Republican proposal. But they did have a meeting, and the leader of the Republican 10, Susan Collins, said this afterwards.
It was a very good exchange of views. I wouldn't say that we came together on a package tonight. No one expected that in a two-hour meeting. But what we did agree to do is to follow up and talk further at the staff level and amongst ourselves and with the president and vice president on how we can continue to work together on this very important issue.
So the tone, at least, from both sides is very different than any Trump meeting with Democratic leaders. But what's the big picture?
I think the big picture on this is looking at how Joe Biden wants to do politics, and that it is ushering in a very different tone. I think where you wrote this morning that, you know, Republicans, particularly Senate Republicans, are looking for normalcy. They're tired of the Donald Trump style brand of politics. They want to be relevant in this. And so even if they aren't going to be, you know, if there's not going to be some massive bipartisan deal on this, which right now it doesn't appear that it is, Democrats are going forward with their own plan, that at least they can have a back and forth and an exchange. And I do think it was significant. And you really see this is where Joe Biden wants to be. He said it many, many times. I'm not sure that, you know, we're going to have a bunch of big bipartisan deals, but at least I feel like they're in the game and are being heard.
Jake Sherman and Anna Palmer now with Punch Bowl News. Thanks a lot for coming on with us today. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.